Hello and welcome to Property Money Tree's Maximising Property Values, the once a month show where I break down the steps of how to recognise, enhance and then extract the values in property in order to create wealth. Would you like to find out how you can benefit from the steps of maximising property values? This is even if you don't own a property yet or have a deposit. If that's a yes, then you're in the right place to find out. My name is Patricia Ogunfaber, and although many know me for my work as a solicitor, on this show you will be getting the benefit of my 30 plus years worth of experience of maximising property values, experience which has given me a net worth in millions. So who might benefit from listening to this show? Literally anyone with an interest in creating property wealth. Right, so following on from last week, I wanted to look into again how we can protect our property businesses. So last week I looked very, very briefly at structures just to get people to start thinking about what they might be able to do and then to go and seek appropriate advice. And then I thought I'd carry on today with slightly more targeted stuff that we can look at. So I'll do a general thing first, and then I'll look at a more property-centric scenario. So in order to protect our businesses, I hope it's not going to be too boring, but I think it really is important for us. And, you know, I have found in life that sometimes the most boring stuff is actually the stuff that we need to know, and the stuff that makes us laugh, that makes us feel good, is often just fluff sometimes. Not all the time, obviously. But anyway, I think this is going to be boring, so I'm warning you in advance. First, we need to look at legal and structural protection, and this actually underpins the foundations to our businesses. Really, really important. So succession and authority planning. Who is going to run the business if we are temporarily or permanently incapacitated? So if we, and no one knows what the future holds. What if we fall ill? What if we wake up one day and we can't speak? What if we are driving down the motorway and we're involved in a crash? We just don't know. Doom and gloom, maybe some people might think it's doom and gloom. To me, it's not so much doom and gloom. It's more about taking practical steps to make sure that the doom and gloom doesn't become terminal. So sorry about that. So who's going to run our businesses? Do we know who that person is? Have we thought about the number of possible people who could do it? Have we spoken to them? Would they be competent in actually doing it? These are the kind of things that we must be thinking about now, particularly as we're going to be moving into the renters' rights regime. And I promised myself I wasn't going to mention renters' rights, and within the first 5 minutes I have, so anyway. What we need to do once we've determined who that person or those people are going to be is we then need to formalise our thinking. So we should really be looking to have business power of attorneys for operational decisions. An appropriate lawyer will be able to do that. I'm not recommending anyone. It's not a sales funnel. So, you know, maybe Google it, maybe speak to other people who might have done this, who can recommend someone who's really good. These things are so, so important. I think it's even more important that we make our own decisions in respect of whom we actually appoint. And then we also need a power of attorney for banking, contracts and stuff like that. we would need key person clauses in shareholder or partnership agreements. Do we have shareholder agreements? Do we have partnership agreements? Are we in joint ventures? If we're in joint ventures, do we have shareholder agreements? It's not too late to actually put one in place. If we're in partnership, do we have a written partnership agreement? If we are in partnership and we don't have a written partnership agreement, it isn't too late to get one done. These are the kind of things that we really should be thinking about, because if we, you know, particularly if it's a joint venture agreement or a partnership agreement, and one party is incapacitated, then the other party can actually run things, which is really good. But banks and other people might ask for written evidence of that person's authority to do what they might be trying to do. So that's the first one. It's like legal and structural protection. Like I said, I'll go through like general stuff first, and then I'll look at property centric ones if time permits. And if it doesn't, I'll just carry on next week. Right, then so that's the first one, legal and structural protection, which is foundational. Then the next one is financial safeguards. So cash flow survival. We need to be protecting our income and be able to cover costs during absence. So insurance is very, very good for this. Again, I spoke about insurance the last time. So this is extremely important. Yes, there is a cost to it, but I think it's going to be money well spent. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, sorry. But we should not be penny wise and pound foolish. We should really look at things in the round. We should consider the worst case scenario and just ask ourselves, what can we do to actually mitigate the scenario that we've just thought about? So in terms of insurance, the types of insurance that we should maybe be thinking about are key person insurance. So the key person insurance can compensate the business for lost revenue. So that's one way of it. Another way that key person insurance works is it can actually provide monies to the business to allow for a competent person to be hired to run the business in your absence. So key person insurance, your insurance broker will be able to talk you through the different options there. Then there's also income protection insurance. So it replaces income. So we can do this on a personal level, and we can also do it on a business level. So I'm just looking at this now for a personal level, and we'll obviously look at the business side of things once I get to the property centric side of protection. Again, that is really it's self-explanatory. Yeah, but like I said, a property one now, but then I remembered that I said I'm going to do that later. Right, business overheads insurance. So if we have overheads, so if we're running our businesses from offices and stuff, we've got staff, we've got utilities, that type of insurance will cover those expenses. And then there's also total and permanent disability insurance, and that's for long-term incapacity. Now, when we're looking at total and permanent disability insurance, we should really be looking also to make sure that such policies cover mental health as well as the physical disability. Very, very important. Right. So I've looked at the legal and the structural protection, which is foundational. I've just spoken about the financial safeguards, which is cash flow survival, because we are talking about our businesses now, and it's about protecting them robustly. Then the third one on my list is operational resilience. So can the business actually run without you? So have we systemized what we're doing? Yeah, I really thought this was so important. I've actually made notes about this, so that I don't miss anything out. I think it's really important because you've given up your time this morning to be here, and I just think it is worth. I appreciate it, and that's why I don't mind doing the extra work to look into these things, and that is why I've actually made notes. So bear with me. So. Are we documenting everything? Are we documenting our key processes? Are we documenting our client handling? Important, really important. What about our financial procedures? Do we have shared knowledge repositories? Do we have those? If we don't, it's not too late. We can start to, we start by thinking about them, and then we take action, and then we implement, and then we'll be covered. And if we've got these things in place, it'll be one less thing to actually worry about. Do we delegate? Do we cross train? So it's one thing to think about who's going to take our place if something goes drastically wrong. What about if things go smooth, if they go smoothly? What about getting somebody else into your business, especially if you're a one-man band? One-man bands can be quite dangerous to a business. So again, that's worth thinking about. Then the fourth one is financial access and controls. Can other people access money safely? So again, if we're going to give someone a financial power of attorney, is it somebody that we trust? Is it somebody who is not financially constrained in their own life, in their own business? Is it somebody who will not be tempted to take money from your business to prop up their own business or their lifestyle or anything else? So these are the kind of things that we want to be asking ourselves. So in terms of financial access and controls, do we want to put somebody else down at our banks as a signatory? If we're not too sure about them, we can actually impose limits. We can impose spending limits, and we can also, you know, make the bank also carry out certain checks before they're allowed to take up money. Of course, that will be inconvenient, but again, this is part of protecting our businesses. So we shouldn't think about offending whomsoever, because if the person is actually going to do a good job, they would not be offended. And they should actually be advising you to do that if you've not done it already. What about emergency cash reserves? How much do we actually have in our bank accounts in case there's an emergency? Is it just 1 month? Is it 2 months? Is it 3 months? Is it 4, 6 months? Is it 12 months? These are questions we need to be asking ourselves. What about mental health? Is it possible that we might burn out? And if so, what can we do to actually prevent that? Do we regularly look at our workloads? Are they things that we can actually cope with? Are they things that we're happy with? Are we doing things that we enjoy doing? Or are we simply doing them for the money? These are things that, in my opinion, are quite important. Do we build in recovery time to the things that we're doing? Do we have external people who can actually check in with us every now and again just to make sure that things are going okay? That can be, if our businesses are big, we can have an external board member. Or if they're not so big, we can have a mentor, or we can have a friend, we can have a family member, as long as we've pointed out to that person our expectations of that particular relationship in that particular scenario. Really important. Do we have a crisis plan? Have we got a written document about how people can be, how we can communicate with our customers. So like I said, this is just a general business overview at the moment. I'll go into property centric in a while. I think we're going to have time to do it, so that's all good. We should have an escalation process as well, you know, A, B, C, and D. If A happens, then B should happen automatically, and then C should happen, and so on and so forth. Again, it will help people not panic in the event that we are incapacitated. What about personal risk mitigation? How risky are we to our own businesses? Like I said, when we're solo people, that is a really, really big risk. So we need to, again, prop ourselves up to make sure that our businesses don't fail if our health or our mental health fails. Have we written a will? Have we signed it? Is it going to be operational? Should it be needed? What about a personal emergency fund? So I've just spoken about a business fund in the event of an emergency. What about a personal emergency fund? Do we have one? Do we still have mortgages? Because that is personal. That's nothing to do with our businesses. If things were to happen, would our mortgages be paid? Do we have clear boundaries between our personal and our business finances? So again, these are risk factors for our businesses if we don't. So we should try and stress test our businesses. I'm talking away. I'm hoping that everyone can hear me. So Lee says it's super easy to fill out a lasting power of attorney yourself. Yes, it may well be, Lee, but you see, for things that are this important, I honestly wouldn't recommend a DIY approach. Like I said, I'm not recommending any particular firm to do this. So this is not a salesy pitch at all. But I certainly would recommend that people get proper professional legal advice in this matter from someone who actually carries professional indemnity insurance. That would be my recommendation. But obviously, you know, people can do it themselves if they think that that is the best way forward for them. It's just that if we're in this room, we're thinking about it, it's not worth doing a half-hearted job of it. We might as well just do it properly. And, you know, how can we do it properly? I wouldn't look to do that properly. And I do have some legal training. You know, to stress test our businesses, who will sign contracts if we can't? Who will pay for all the, you know, the stuff that needs paying for? And who will talk to our, you know, our customers and people like that? Then how long can the revenue drop before the business is at risk? So they're the main business type things. Now, let's look at things from a property point of view. So again, so some of this is going to be, you know, repetitive, but if it goes in, it's all well and good. Let's have a look. So Lee says, ironically, my Golden Five West End lawyer told me not to pay his fee and to do it myself. Well, do you know, Lee, maybe that's all well and good, but is the lawyer, does he have expertise in this area? Because you see, lawyers, very good lawyers, will not dabble into areas where they're not experts. If they're giving advice and they're doing it professionally, they will not dabble, because it's putting their indemnity insurance at risk. Maybe it's very, very simple. Maybe it's not. But my advice certainly would be to get somebody who does this regularly and knows what they're doing to actually do it for you, and to make sure that it's done, it's all done and dusted. Now, also, Lee, it may well be that your lawyer, who knows you, knows that you're very competent and you can do it yourself, but that is a decision that you can make for you. Like I say, you know, everyone will make their own decision as to what is best for them. It's just that I wouldn't advocate that people actually do this themselves. I've seen those documents and I've seen the DIY forms, and they're actually quite detailed. And, you know, to know and understand the implications of each answer that's being given, I think is it can be a bit of a stretch for some people. You know, I've had people do it themselves before, and they've contacted me and said, oh, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And, you know, but these are people who know that I'm not giving them legal advice, and they can't, you know, if they get it wrong, then sue me. So, you know, friends and family, really. And I've been able to just say, well, this is what I think about this, and this is what I think about that. But then it still doesn't mean that I'm getting it right. Probably am, but there's no guarantee that what I'm telling them is actually correct, which is why it's good to go to a professional person who does this day in, day out, knows what they're doing, and they are prepared to put their professional indemnity on the line. But then, yeah, all well and good. So we're talking about, you know, the LPAs, legal power of attorneys. So professional and so for property now, lasting power of attorneys. So when we're in properties, we should be looking at LPAs, lasting power of attorneys. One for the property and financial affairs, and one for our health and our welfare. So the first one is the business related. The second one is personal. For the second one, who's going to cover decisions about our care if we can't make them ourselves? Very, very important. We can choose family members, or we can choose business partners. We can choose a professional. It is here where I would say we don't necessarily need a professional as the person who's going to be our attorney. We just need to find a competent person, and it could be a competent person who is a family member, but we need to tell them what we expect of them. We need to give them the power of attorney so that they can read it, and they need to confirm to us that they are happy act in that capacity. And I think that is quite important. So those are to do with the lasting power of attorneys. And so that comes under the legal, the foundational stuff that I spoke about earlier. The second thing, again, going back to insurance. So the critical insurance for landlords is going to be income protection insurance. Now, rent guarantee insurance goes part of the way towards that. But anyone who takes out rent guarantee insurance knows that it's actually for a limited period of time. So most rent guarantee insurances are for 12 months. Honestly, I don't think they're fit for purpose. I think we need them to be for at least 12 months or for the lifetime of that particular tenant in that particular premises, and we pay an annual rent for every year that they are there, whether or not they're still paying their rent. So the way that rent guarantee insurance works at the moment, as I understand it, and if anyone else thinks differently, please do, you know, put your comments in the thing, or do come up and join me. The way it works at the moment is you reference your tenant, comprehensive referencing, they pass, you can buy an associated rent guarantee insurance policy. They're normally limited to 12 months. Now, So if your tenant stops paying rent in month 10, some of them will say that they will carry on paying. Not many of them do, because they'll say the policy is only for 12 months. So they'll pay, let's assume, because again, they tend to have a period. You have to give, oh, I tell you, they're only good for kind, in my opinion, for tenants who stop paying quite early on. Because when I've had to claim in the past, and fortunately I haven't had to, for too many of them, first of all, the policy doesn't kick in until you are able to actually start proceedings in the, until you're able to actually serve a notice on the tenant for rent arrears. Now, in the past, currently, because we're January 2026, the rent arrears would have to be at least 2 months. So there's 2 months where you're not really claiming anything because you can't actually serve a notice. And then you serve the notice and then, you know, the policy actually kicks in. So hopefully you can begin to appreciate the limitations of rent guarantee insurance. Now, if on the other hand, the insurance was, yes, we will cover you for this tenant in this particular premises, and you will pay every year whilst the tenant is still occupying the premises because you haven't been able to get a court order ordering possession and they haven't left, you will pay so much per year. I would love those kind of policies. And that would be the kind of policy that would cover us under this insurance provision. But we shouldn't automatically think that rent guarantee insurance is going to cover us completely. It will cover us to a certain extent. There are some policies which are actually very, very good, and they say that they will cover up to when the tenant actually leaves. They're the best, and they're the ones to actually look for. Ainsley used to do such a policy. Open Rent, when I first read their policy, it did, but I haven't read it recently, and it may well have changed. And there are some other really good policies as well. One good thing about the Open Rent policy, which that is referenced anywhere, I guess, but preferably with Open Rent, you can actually change the policy and put the new tenant's details on the policy. And all you do is you pay an admin fee of £20 plus VAT. So I had a tenant who wanted to just stay for 6 months. And so his fixed term AST was for 6 months. And I took out the 12-month policy. I got a new tenant for the same property, and that's all I've had to do, just change the name of the tenant. Because you see, what they do is they give you a policy per property, and then the tenant's name is not actually on the policy. So this is just for them and admin purposes. And I just think that's really, really fair. Because you've paid for 12 months up front. And then what is also good is to not forget to renew the insurance when it comes up. So if the tenant is still paying, then it's a good idea to actually renew it. But one of the conditions of renewal that I have seen is that the tenant's circumstances haven't changed and they haven't missed any rent payments. Now, so if they're already in arrears, that means you won't be able to buy the policy for another 12 months. But anyway, so that's that on that income protection. We should be looking at other income protection insurance. Loss of rent insurance. So again, loss of rent insurance can come with our our buildings insurance. So if we take up buildings insurance and we declare that we're a landlord, we're often offered loss of rent insurance, which is a fantastic part of insurance to actually take up. So if, for instance, we own a house, which is when we'd be looking at taking up building insurance and or contents insurance, we then can take out this loss of rent insurance, which is not the same as rent guarantee. But this loss of rent is, say the house burns down, the building's insurance will hopefully kick in to allow us to rebuild the house. But if we have a mortgage, we are still going to be liable for the mortgage payments, but there won't be any rent coming in because the house has burnt down, the tenants have left, hopefully without any injury, without any loss of life, but there's no rent coming in. But in the meantime, we have mortgages to pay, or a mortgage to pay. So this is where the loss of rent, that's what that means. That will then pay you the rent that you've lost due to one of your insurable risks. So that would be the same if the property was flooded or if something else happened, maybe subsidence and you had to ask people to leave. But it would have to be one of the things that you're covered for under that policy. I think it's well worth looking into. And if we've got those kind of policies, maybe we should be talking to our insurance brokers and asking them to add the loss of rent thing. It's never too late. It's only ever too late once a claim situation has arisen and then we're looking to do something about it when we're not properly covered. Then we should also be looking at key person insurance / mortgage protection. So again, this is another type of, honestly, insurance brokers. I'll probably look for an insurance broker who can come and talk to us, you know, in detail about these things. But it's really important. Key person / mortgage protection. So whilst we might have loss of rent, and that could deal with things like, obviously, the mortgage, it can deal with salaries, it can deal with, because, you know, for people who run their businesses through companies and pay themselves a salary, that salary might be needed to pay for, you know, mortgages on homes, might be needed to pay for children and other things. So the key person / mortgage protection is different. So mortgage protection is just what it says on the tin. It will pay the mortgage if we are unable to work or something happens to us. Again, really, really important. Key person insurance, again, that comes in where a key person is incapacitated and it allows the business to go and employ somebody else who can actually stand in that person's shoes. But that might not be necessary if we've put the previous steps that I've spoken about in place. And any of these, like key person mortgage insurance, that can deal with temporary incapacity or long-term disability or a serious illness. Talking about serious illnesses, critical illness cover tends to cover those. It can be expensive, but to my mind, I think it's worth it. So critical illness, it will pay a lump sum if the person is diagnosed with a serious health condition. And it could be like a heart attack, a stroke, it can be cancer, one of the latter stages of cancer, and stuff like that. Because if that is the case for someone, are they really going to be thinking about their business? I'm not sure they will. I think they're going to be thinking more about their health. Can they do anything to prolong their lives and stuff like that? So the lump sum from critical illness at cover will allow the person to maybe pay off mortgages. If the mortgages are paid off, then the person can then go about maybe you know, or the person that they've appointed to deal with things, if need be. Obviously, everyone will decide how they want to do it best, and how their attorney under their power of attorneys wants to deal with things. But the lump sum might just take one worry off of their minds, and then they can focus on their health and how to get better. I know lots of people who, when they've been diagnosed with a serious health illness, they've actually left the UK and gone somewhere warmer, because they've been told that that will help them recover, it will help them get better. And so again, there's a cost to doing that, and there's a cost to making sure that things are running, you know, properly in the UK. So again, critical illness cover, and it gets more expensive the older you get, and I can tell you that from personal knowledge. When we're looking at these insurances, again, it's worth asking about whether or not it also covers mental health illness. Then we are looking for properties at operational continuity. How do we keep the business running? Do we have a property manager, or is it just us? So again, you will remember that I said that when we're running things ourselves, just as ourselves, that is a risk to the business. It is worth considering a property manager, even if it's on a part-time basis, even if it's just for, I don't know, maybe 5 hours a week. But they know exactly how your business runs, and they can handle rent collection, they can coordinate repairs, they can communicate with tenants, and they can deal with emergencies. So you can either pay them a fixed fee, or you can pay them a percentage of rent. It doesn't need to be full time. And there are people out there who actually do this, and they do it for quite a number of businesses, but they know what they're doing. But if you're going to employ somebody like that, you need to make sure that they're not just collecting, you know, the monies that you're paying, and that they're not overwhelmed themselves, because that in itself will be risky to your business. So if we need to document key processes, we need to have clear written documents that deal with how rents are collected, that deal with who does our repairs, who does inspections, and who is the emergency contact. How do we deal with arrears? All of this needs to be written down. Now, it's important that we also list people who are like our handymen, our plumbers, our electricians, people like that. Do we have a solicitor? Do we have an accountant? Their names, their numbers, their email addresses. Do we have cloud facilities? Are we storing our stuff in the cloud, or are we still running paper-based businesses? Again, things to think about. So financial structures. What will happen if we can't act? What will our bank say? What will our mortgage lender say if we have got mortgages? Again, things to think about. I've already spoken about, you know, banks and dual access, and we should be writing to our banks and getting them to acknowledge our lasting powers of attorney, because once they've done that, it will just kick into place once, you know, anything happens. And anything can happen. Some people are very lucky, they're healthy through to a very old and ripe age, and some people aren't as lucky. Some people, unfortunately, pass away in their 30s, in their 40s. So this is not just for older people, it's for anyone. Estate and exit planning. What are we doing? Have we, like I asked before, have we written our wills? have we, all the things that I've spoken about before, if they're in place, that will give us succession planning, no problems. But who are we leaving our businesses to? Are they interested in running a property business? Because if they're not, again, that is a sure route to failure. So we need, if they're not, if it's our children, family members, whomsoever, we need to be a point, making sure that there's a manager there who can actually maybe close things down and sell and then put the monies into our estates for distribution. Last week I spoke about how certain structures allow that to be done outside of inheritance tax. But you know, these are things that only professionals can, you know, properly advise about. These are just, I'm just simply mentioning them I'm just giving, so I was just reading a note here. I'm simply mentioning them so that we can put things in place. And do you know what? Once we have put these things in place, it will be less of a burden on us. And I think that will also help with our mental health. Now, Imi has said, SME, thank you. Imi has said, all these services add significant extra cost. They do. But I think it's a cost worth paying. I honestly do. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is the business model viable? Can it afford it? Absolutely. Because if it can't afford it, then we need to be shutting it down. Because if it can't afford these things that I'm talking about, which are not significant things, can it afford a 40,000 penalty from the local authority if we get something wrong? Can it afford a rent repayment order? These are going to be more or less automatic if we make mistakes going forward. Clearly not. So, you know, yes, thank you, Imi. That is something that we do need to be asking ourselves. Are our businesses actually viable? Then Imi says, SME landlords are going to find it hard to survive, let alone thrive. Yep. And also, actually, let me know if you think it's going to be worth me doing perhaps next week about rent repayment orders. They are coming in fast and furiously now. So it is something that I think people should be aware of. It's not something that I ever concerned myself about, because I thought there's no way that anyone can, you know, get a rent repayment order, you know, against me or my businesses. But I am looking at them now, because you just never know. You just never know. With the Renters' Rights Act, the government has provided guidance regarding rent repayment orders. And one of the things it talks about is if there's damp and if there's mould in a property. Mould can be due to a number of reasons, not just down to the fabric of the building. It could be lifestyle, it could be anything. But anyway, today is not about that. Let me know if you think it would be. Okay, Imi says yes, that would be useful. Okay, fine. I will definitely prepare something that I can share with people. If anyone thinks it's not going to be useful, I guess if they come into the room, I've headed it rent repayment orders, they just won't come in, or they'll come and they'll leave. But I think it's going to be important for us to know about them. And I'll look at some cases as well, just to let people know how the tribunals are actually looking at things. They've moved a lot from the early days of where the amounts were not crippling to the landlord to crippling amounts. I read just this week about, I think, a landlord who was fined, was it £150,000 in, was that a rent repayment order? I'm not sure. could have been, but anyway, next week I'll have a look at that. Right, so going back to the topic of today, so I've spoken about wills. Who inherits our businesses? Are we giving it to people as you have that property, or this property is divided between two or three people, or it just goes to one person, or do we have shares? We looked at Alphabet shares, or we spoke about Alphabet shares last week. Again, what are we doing? How are the assets going to be managed? Even if the beneficiaries are not interested in them, because the last thing we want is for everything to just drop off a cliff. We don't want that. We want it managed properly until it can be properly exited. Otherwise, why are we working? Why are we doing what we're doing? If it's all just going to be run into the ground. What about trusts? Can they help? So again, these are things that our professional advisors will look at and tell us about. One thing to say about this is we used to be able to read messages that people sent to us whilst we were talking, but now we can't do that. If we try and read a message, it kicks us out of the room. And if I'm kicked out of this room, the room will be closed down because I'm the only person on stage. Eva also says yes to rent repayment orders. So yes, definitely that will happen. Thank you guys for the feedback. Right, then what about... Oh, also what is important, very, very important, is with our businesses, if we were to pass away, inheritance tax needs to be paid before the property can be sold. So there are businesses out there that will lend money so that the tax can be paid. But obviously, like anything else, it will carry a hefty amount in terms of interest rates. So again, let's look at this. How is it going to happen? You might say, oh, I want to sell the property and then I'll pay the, or the beneficiaries might want to sell the property and then they can pay the inheritance tax. But they can't sell the property because they can't give, or the representatives can't give good title without the inheritance tax having first been paid. So it's something to also look at and look into. Insurance also can help there. Right, personal well-being. So even as a property person, we should try and avoid sole reliance in our businesses. And I should really be thinking about that. I have not too much. People know about what I'm doing and I've put certain things in place, mainly for joint ventures, actually, not for my individual stuff. But anyway, so even when we are working on our own and we've got loose arrangements with people, we should be looking to take routine breaks. How often do we go on? How often do we take a break? And it doesn't mean going abroad. I think it would be false to say you can stay home and really take a break, because you're not really, well, anyway, I can't do that. I can't take a break when I'm staying at home, because I just tend to do things. But it doesn't mean going abroad. It could be just going to the next town over. It could be just going, perhaps even taking a day break, driving down to, a resort, driving to a seaside, and just sitting perhaps on the beach and just looking out and just clearing your mind. I'm not talking about, expensive holidays here. I'm talking about proper breaks where you step away from your business, you step away from your home life. And you're able to literally relax, but you'll never be able to relax if your business is in a crisis. So, putting the things that I've spoken about will help that not happen. Right, Cameron says, life covers could partially be used to mitigate the impact of IHT. Yes, I say partially as they could be very expensive. Yes, indeed. So anything that we can do to, you know, think about the future. I have a friend, and I love my friend's, you know, philosophy, and I partly agree with it. And that is, do you know, I've worked really hard for my money. I'm going to spend as much as I can during my lifetime. And whatever is left, my children haven't actually worked for it. And so whatever tax they need to pay, they can pay. And whatever is left is a bonus. But yeah, but you know, then why are we working as hard as we are if we're not looking to provide some sort of legacy? What about school fees planning for grandchildren? If you're in that, you know, kind of like the mind frame, I don't have any grandchildren yet. I am hoping for some. But, you know, what about that? Is it going to be necessary for them? I'm just throwing stuff out there. So annual leave, do we take annual leave? Do we delegate tasks? Can we delegate tasks? So these are, you know, the kind of things that we really, really, really should be, you know, looking into and looking at. Now, if we are going to, you know, have a last in power of attorneys, I was able to get a letter. It's just a broad letter, which we can use to instruct our banks and our lenders and other people like that. And then you want them to actually acknowledge receipt of that letter. So I'm just going to quickly read it out. I'm a sole property investor and landlord operating in the UK. This lasting power of attorney for property and financial affairs is intended to allow my appointed attorney to fully manage my property business in the event that I am physically or mentally unable to do so, either temporarily or permanently. This authority should include, but not, so this authority includes, but is not limited to, managing my bank accounts connected to my rental properties, collecting rental income and handling arrears, paying mortgages, service charges, insurance, utilities and taxes, instructing letting agents and property managers, authorising repairs, maintenance and emergency works, and signing tenancy agreements, renewals and notices, communicating with tenants, lenders, insurers, accountants and HMRC, managing self-assessments and tax obligations, selling or refinancing properties. It is my intention that my attorney can act quickly and without unnecessary restriction to maintain business continuity and tenant welfare. So it's not just about putting or having a lasting power of attorney. It's also letting the people who can be obstructive know about what you've done, and also instructing them to not stand in the way of letting that lasting power of attorney work efficiently. Really, really, really important. So business continuity for property. So some of the things that we might want to do is we write down our key contacts. Do we have a managing agent? Is there a property manager? The name of the company, their phone number, their email address, I mentioned that before, plumber, electrician, gas engineer, solicitor, accountant, all of those kind of people, insurance provider, mortgage lender, mortgage account number, contact numbers for each and every person. Then for each property that we have, the address, the tenant name or names, their details. So again, with our data protection registration or data registration with the ICO, we need to make sure that it allows us to share this kind of information with our staff and with our attorneys and other such people, our managers. So tenant name, tenant telephone number, tenant email, tenant other address in the UK if need be, tenancy type and the end date. Well, the end date is going to be largely academic, come 1st of May, the monthly rent, a deposit scheme and reference, the deposit type. Are we aware that there are two types of deposit types? There's the custodial deposit, where the whole deposit amount is given to the protection company and they protect it. And there's also the insurance-based protection, whereby a fee is paid to the protection organisation, but the landlord actually keeps the deposit and then the landlord deals with it accordingly at the end of the tenancy. And if there are disputes with the insurance-based one, the amount that is disputed has to be sent to the deposit protection company. And then once the dispute is resolved, the deposit company will then divvy out the disputed amount as it sees fit. So again, it's important to state when we're listing the documentation that we say whether it's custodial or insurance based. Again, it's worth putting down a contact phone number. Rent collection, how do we collect our rents? We say what day the rent is due for each tenant. We say how it's paid. Is it paid by standing order? Is it paid manually? Is it paid to us? Is it paid to an agent? The bank account that we use and then action if the rent is late. What do we do? Do we have set procedures in place? Is there a day 5 reminder? Is there a day 14 reminder? Is there you've missed your rent for last month type reminder? Do we know what we do if the tenant doesn't respond? Do we escalate it immediately? Are we the kind of landlord who will do an MCOL immediately? So that is money claim online. Do we do that? How do a letter before action? Do we have a template in place where we send it to the tenant and say, and we should really with letters before action be giving at least 14 days notice. Are we saying, you've missed your rent? If it's not paid within 14 days of the date of this letter, I will be issuing a claim against you for the rent with the money claim online. Because you see, lots of tenants and landlords too believe that the only way to get rent, which has not been paid, is by serving a ground 8 possession order, but it isn't. Ground 8 is for possession, and the money's owed is a different thing altogether. Now, you can combine the money owed with the possession ground and make it, yes, rent has not been paid for 3 months, I am therefore owed so much, or you can decide to do them separately. You can just say, I want possession, money has been owed, or money is owed, and I need this, and I'd like possession, please. And you can go down the MCOL route as soon as a payment is missed. So that can be from month one. And, if you do that, you can say to your tenant, look, go and take legal advice, go to your Citizens Advice Bureau, go to Shelter, go to whomsoever. But if I am successful, there will be a county court judgment in your name or against your name. So these are the kind of procedures. What procedures do we actually follow? We need to be listing them. Now, in emergencies, I'm going to try and quickly finish this. Right. Let me see how much more I've got to do. Because it might be worth... Okay, there's still... Okay, actually, that's not too much. Right. In an emergency, who are we going to, I'm going to rush this, should finish in the next 5 minutes. In an emergency, who do they contact? If there's no heating, if there's no water, if there's electrical danger, if there's a flood, stroke, fire, if there are gas issues, who do they contact? So again, we put these details down, we put the phone numbers down, and then what processes do we actually put in place? Can they call an approved contractor immediately? And then, for me, my gas person is always been my gas person. I try and have two of every person. So two gas people, two electric people, because sometimes my main person isn't available and I don't want to wait. To my mind, anything that's going to impact my tenants, I just do not, negatively, I do not like it. And if I'm notified of an issue, I want it resolved ASAP, which I'm sure is the same for literally everyone who's in this room today. How do we deal with that? Do you know what? No, I'm going to stop. And then I will maybe do this, but you get the gist. Maintenance as well. List the people who are doing it. Insurance. List your insurance companies and their contacts. Tax and compliance. List your people who is doing it. The accountant details, your documents, where they're stored, and stuff like that. So I think that just brings us to a nice conclusion. So everyone, thank you for coming.